Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
All right, dude.
All right.
Sure. We all got to work a little bit late.
Yeah.
All the trauma of the traffic lights in Joburg not
right.
working once
back
again.
Back with the bang. Hey, jeez. Like.
I feel like we're witnessing that moment in the horror movie where you think the killer's dead.
Oh, right.
And everyone has a big sigh, and then there's one more like, get up.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's still alive.
Load shedding will return.
And it's stage six, so it means he's up with a gun.
I see. Yeah.
And he's going to fucking murder us. How's it, guys?
Yeah, all right.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in. I hope you've got an inverter so that you can enjoy anything you're going to rent from
yes.
the video store here.
Otherwise, you're just going to look at it.
Yeah, otherwise you're just going to be waiting. My name is Russell, and I've got myself a G-Force here.
Hello.
Who is an editor and the producer of this show. We've got ourselves a Perrin.
Yes.
Perrin P-Dog.
What up?
And you are a writer, cameraman, shooter, editor,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, a bit of everything.
We're not working. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And us three chaps have gotten together here to do a shift.
Yeah.
Here at the video store. It is, yeah, as we said, another day in Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
Another day, another rand. And... life just slightly more on hard mode, but hopefully not for too long. I feel like our load shedding is not a long, sort of year-long endeavor like it once was. Hopefully by the weekend they can have it solved.
That's yeah.
There was something like 10 generating units out and we've already got 6 back or something
okay.
like that. So here's hoping.
Yes.
But yeah, we are going to chat about things like The Monkey.
Yep.
Which is a new film made by horror director Osgood Perkins,
yep. mm-hmm.
which is going to hit cinemas around the world, including South Africa, this coming Friday.
Yeah.
And Oki's got a chance to watch it ahead of time. There's some TV shows
okay.
we can talk about.
Yes.
I'm cool. getting a little bit further into Paradise, which is the big
okay.
Disney
Sick,
Plus.
Yeah.
Which is shaping up to be pretty good.
Cool, cool, cool.
But we like to kick things off with a little Hey, Did You Guys See? Which is our little flash news hot goss.
Yes.
Mm.
And G-Force, are you able to kick things off?
Oh, Lord, I can probably kick things off in a manner.
Okay.
Hey, did you guys see that Mr. Dwayne A Rock Johnson is going to be in Martin Scorsese's next film?
I saw that.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about what the film is?
It's something about like organized crime in Hawaii.
Yeah. Apparently it's based on a true story.
Yeah.
I know DiCaprio's involved as well.
Yes.
But
and Emily Blunt.
Yeah. Scorsese's slate is looking busy. He's
yeah.
doing a Devil in the White City adaptation
yep.
with DiCaprio
as well.
He's been wanting to do that for years and years and years.
What is Devil in the White City?
Is it not a true crime?
I think so. I don't know the story.
I don't know the story too much, but I know...
It's a very Scorsese-sounding title.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. I mean, Scorsese is one of the old guard that is still wildly consistent.
Yeah.
Like, he's a master of his craft. He takes his time. I mean, there's a reason why he's one of my top three all-time favorite filmmakers.
Nice.
Absolute legend. Like, very excited for that. Oh.
Yeah, but I think it seems like the kind of thing Scorsese does. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing Dwayne Johnson does. He's making interesting choices. I think he's kind of been forced into this position.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's just doing Smashing Machine, whatever it's called,
with Benny Safdie.
Yeah, with the Safdies. And he's playing a UFC fighter,
yes.
I think, in that. And he looks, I saw set photos, he's unrecognizable.
Yeah, and it's an A24 movie.
Yeah, yeah, so...
It makes sense. I feel like he's done a lot of the Smash It Up
sort of
tentpole films.
Yes.
And then those tents got smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They stopped making money.
And they weren't as big because we're also getting smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting evolved as
a cinema audience. And honestly, to put it really simply, the more we're looking at our phones,
yes.
even just from Instagram reels, the smarter and more film literate we're getting as an audience. So we are getting tired of the same old.
Right. Yeah. I think the interesting thing about The Rock with that is because we've seen numerous times now that wrestlers are actually really good actors.
Yeah, they sometimes
Batista
are.
Batista is fantastic. He's great. That Blade Runner, that opening is phenomenal. John Cena is fantastic.
In the right role.
He's hilarious. Yeah. He's like comedic timing is spot on.
Yes.
So I'm interested to see what The Rock actually has to offer us because we've only seen him in the same khaki shirt in every jungle and every movie ever made.
Because like his early career, he did more. He was willing to do more interesting things and take a few more risks.
Southland Tales.
Southland Tales, Pain and Gain.
Yeah, exactly. Pain and Gain was fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed Pain and Gain.
That was fun.
Hey, did you guys see the same creators as the Avatar The Last Airbender animated show is doing a new animated series in that universe for Netflix, and it's called The Seven Havens.
Okay, I didn't know it was for Netflix.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And it's only going to be 2 seasons, 26 episodes, and it's set after The Legend of Korra.
Yes. So it's the next Avatar after Korra.
Yeah, so did you ever watch...
I know about it.
Yeah, so don't let the M. Night Shyamalan movie affect your opinion of that show, because the animated series is magical.
Yep.
Like, so good. And there was a spin-off called The Legend of Korra, which follows another...
It's like a sequel.
Yeah,
a spin-off, I would say.
And it's just so good.
Yeah, great. I think they're both great.
Yeah, I love Legend of Korra as well. I'm excited for that. It's going to be very cool.
Yeah, hey, did you guys see we're getting ourselves a new Wes Anderson?
Hey.
Yeah.
All right, so it's slated for the 30th of May, which is around the corner.
Geez, that's what soon.
Yeah. It's called The Phoenician Scheme.
Yes. Okay.
And it's just got everyone that's famous.
I mean.
its IMDb logline is a dark tale of espionage following... a strained father-daughter relationship within a family business. Twists revolve around betrayal and morally gray choices.
Right.
And we have ourselves Scarlett Johansson, Tom Hanks, Bill Murray,
of course,
obviously.
Bryan Cranston,
cool.
Benedict Cumberbatch,
nice.
Benicio del Toro, Michael Cera. There's more. Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Charlotte Gainsbourg. That's cool.
Yeah, it goes on. So it's very exciting.
Yeah.
I have, as a big fan of Wes Anderson, felt he has been crawling further and further up his own ass.
I agree, 100%.
The French Dispatch, to me, like, kind of left me cold.
Yeah,
like,
I didn't care for it as well.
All kooky, no quality for me.
I also felt Asteroid City was
was kind of similar, where I sort of left that going, hold on, I'm sort of missing the juice.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of his stuff in amongst the quirk has this heart.
Exactly. Grand Budapest was the last one.
And it's been lacking. So here's hoping there's a little return to form here.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think I find that his best work is the ones where he co-wrote with Owen Wilson.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like Owen Wilson almost injected the heart into those from the sounds.
Left alone, it feels like an AI did it.
Yeah, it feels like AI was fed. That's what I felt Asteroid City was. AI was fed Wes Anderson content, and there was like, cool, this is a Wes Anderson movie. Yeah. And I wanted to love it, but it just got so full of itself. And I still, Wes Anderson is one of those directors, even if I won't be a fan of his past 3 or 2 or whatever movies, I'll still give him a shot every time because it's
totally.
Wes Anderson.
No, totally. You know? And it's interesting. I mean, he pumps these things out on the cheap. You actually hear these big time actors going, you know, we don't get money from a Wes Anderson film. We get paid like the literally minimum wage.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily do well either. I think even the more successful ones haven't been these huge box offices. But he keeps the cred, so it's interesting.
I got to say, I think my Asteroids problem with Asteroid City is almost the exact opposite of that. I think saying like it feels AI generated makes it feel like it's an oversimplification. It's saying like the whole thing's oversimplified.
Okay.
Whereas I think the problem with Asteroid City is that it was way too convoluted.
100%.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. You
know, it's like framing device within a framing device within a framing device.
No, that part was a bit silly.
It was like there's like too much happening there, and it's like its own kind of like themes kind of get clouded in its.
Yeah, it feels like you said, it feels lost. It feels like you wrote a first draft and didn't actually go back and go, okay, let's clear this up.
Yeah.
But what did I want to say? Wes Anderson, though, like you said, they do it on the cheap. He is a proper auteur as well.
Yeah.
Who no one makes films like him. He has lots of imitators, especially in the advertising spaces.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
But no one can actually replicate what he does, right? So, like, he's one of those few filmmakers I find right now who can actually get any project they want made, regardless of how much they earn. Christopher Nolan, Scorsese, Tarantino, Spielberg, Villeneuve, they all are thrown money to do whatever the hell they want these days.
Mm.
David Fincher as well, you know? But yeah, I'm interested to see. Hopefully it's a return to form, because I liked his
Netflix shorts.
Yeah, those were great. Yeah. Because he had source material to work with.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, so the Phoenician scheme.
Cool.
Should be fun.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys see the first set photo from Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey has been released?
Oh, I missed that.
So it's Matt Damon. He's playing the lead character. I'm blanking on the name. I haven't read The Odyssey. I'm going to read that.
I don't think many of us have read The Odyssey.
I'm going to read that in preparation to it. But I'm very hesitant on this one. Normally, I'm very excited for any Christopher Nolan project.
Yeah.
But that cast seems odd.
like
Matt Damon as a Greek. You know what I mean? The thing is,
they used to be blonde.
Yeah, that's true, actually. But, like, I don't know, the cast seems like it is also another every famous person ever, isn't it? But one thing, like, I'm interested to see the Safdie, what's his name, who was in Oppenheimer?
Yeah, Benny Safdie.
He's come back for that, which is cool. But Tom Holland is playing a major role in it as well, which will be nice to see him shed the weight of the MCU finally.
Hopefully.
But I am, the thing with that project is when they announced it was The Odyssey with that cast, I was like, maybe it's a modern interpretation of it. Maybe it's set in a modern world, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like it is, at least for now. It might, with Christopher Nolan, you actually can't predict what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So I'm excited, but I'm also a little cautious just based on that cast. I'm like, I don't know where it's going with this.
Right. You
know
he hasn't done much period stuff, has he?
Most of his stuff is.
Yeah, he's done period, but not that far back period.
Yeah,
he's done like 40s, late
1800s. We've got
Prestige and.
Prestige is quite long ago. Okay.
Dunkirk.
My bad. Sorry.
But this is like.
Remember
way further back period.
But remember the rumors were circulating about what his next movie was? One of them was a Victorian vampire.
Yes.
a vampire movie involved with spies. I was like, okay. But yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, it's Christopher Nolan. I'm always going to give him the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. You know what I mean?
And give it the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
Hey, did you guys see this Chinese film?
Oh, yes.
Neza 2,
The
second Neza, is now the highest grossing animated film of all time, having made nearly $2 billion.
Yep.
It's the only movie to ever make over $1 billion in a single market.
I think you brought that up.
Yeah.
You did. Who brought that up? Gad.
I think Gad brought
it
up.
Gad was a "Hey, did you guys see a while ago?" When that was the interesting
fact.
That's
crazy, because I haven't seen. I'm not going to pretend I've seen the first one, so I want to check it out.
Does anyone know anything about any of these movies?
No.
Wild, huh?
Absolutely nothing.
I wonder why it's done so well. I think that's so interesting. Why this particular one has done as particularly well as it has?
I think it's just culturally very relevant to Chinese identity right now. So I think. That's one thing that blows my mind of when movies do so well in the East, like in Korea, China, Japan, that don't really travel anywhere else, is that it reminds us that there's a world outside of the West.
Of course. Yeah.
I mean, China's a billion people.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's why there are a lot of movies, when they bomb being released in the US, they're like, just wait till it's released in China. Because it often regains.
Save it.
Yeah. like every single time. It's
China
crazy.
Will very soon be the biggest film market in the world.
Yeah, I think very China soon. Is going to be the. I think we're witnessing the downfall of America right now, the American Empire, and I think China's going to take its place like properly.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Do you have any other ones, P-Dog?
Yeah, one more.
Okay, cool.
Okay, did you guys see Amazon has taken control of James Bond franchise?
Yeah, that's
now.
Actually very surprising.
Yeah, so the Broccolis, I think, were the family who owned the film rights to it.
For years.
For years. And
like multiple generations of Broccolis.
Yeah, it's like a family.
Something like 70 years of them being the producers.
Yeah, it's like a family business. Yeah. Like Daniel Craig even said that they're the wonderful, most warm people he's ever worked with, blah, blah, blah.
And they've been really protective of it up until now, which makes me wonder what brought this deal about.
So people are nervous now because Jeff Bezos, his first thing said was, who are we going to cast as James Bond? And everyone's like, oh no, they're going to Americanize it. They're going to do 20 TV shows out of it.
Yeah, they're
going to
break this thing open like Star Wars.
But I don't think it's. I don't think. I mean, Amazon hasn't shown us that they are the same, at least with entertainment wise mindset as a Disney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So time will tell, but I'm hoping they still keep it very English, you know?
Yeah, I think they'll. Assume they'll have the common sense to keep a British.
Yeah, I don't
actor.
Think they're going to, because even Americans want it to stay strictly British.
Exactly.
There's a lovely podcast that's kind of very similar to our video store.
Yeah.
And I forget what it's called. Pulp Kitchen.
Oh, I've heard of it.
Pulp Kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And something came by my feed from them. And the dude who was the main attraction in Baby Girl.
Harris Dickinson.
Harris Dickinson.
Yeah.
This one guy in the podcast said, I've seen that his IMDb upcoming films.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
That's interesting.
That he's got nothing coming up for such a big name, in demand, hyped, guy. His Baby Girl, and Triangle of Sadness. Like he's on the up. He should have a lot of opportunities, and he's kept his future clear.
That's crazy.
But he's at the perfect point in his career where he's. Known and famous, but not that famous.
Yeah, I still think he's overlooked. I think he's severely underrated still.
So this guy is rating, they think he's in the running to be the next James Bond.
I think a lot of people are in the running. You can see what they do where...
Where the other people who are rumored,
just
to prove this guy's theory, have all got huge titles coming up. Everyone's got three or four things coming.
Yes.
The all the other sort of obvious ones that have been rumored.
Yeah.
But he's been very quiet and he's got nothing coming up.
Okay. But you can also tell when certain rumors come out and when certain recently a whole bunch of audition tapes leaked. And you can tell, it's the studio who's putting out rumors and leaks to gauge how the audience reacts to
that's
them.
That's a good point, yeah.
I think anyone who's young enough or even middle-aged enough, handsome and charming in English, is in the running.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No,
it could be interesting. I know Henry Cavill's been on everyone's mind.
Yeah. Well, his audition tape for James Bond leaked recently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, that's I'm saying it got leaked, quote-unquote.
Did he just submit his...
He auditioned about the time of Daniel Craig doing it.
Okay, I thought
he was way too young. He was early
20s.
Oh,
yes. At the time. One of my mates said it's actually not very good.
No, it's crap.
Yeah.
You can tell he's not in the right.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a good choice for it regardless, but you can tell at that point in particular he's not ready for it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They need to do period James Bond, set it in the 60s.
And he was Wolverine.
Oh, that could be cool.
Yeah, I think they need to take it back to the 60s, all the old school gadgets.
Yeah, he was in Uncle, The Man from Uncle as well. Yeah.
That was a very underrated film.
It's
I never actually finished it. I watched it on a plane once.
It's a vibes movie.
It's vibes. Mm-hmm. It's vibes.
Did you ever watch the original 60s TV show?
No.
Apparently it's good fun. Very campy.
Cool.
I also saw in amongst all the rumors that the next James Bond would be leaning into the more fun, spoofy campy.
I hope so.
Oh, okay.
Because the Daniel Craig one was a very... the way Nolan did Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, James was a very real serious one.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? I felt that because the first one was Casino Royale, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that was a direct reaction to the Bourne Identity because the Bourne Identity just came out and then James Bond came out a year later or something. Mm. And Bourne Identity, everyone was like, this is James Bond, but gritty and realistic. And then, lo and behold, James Bond came, and they're like, oh, we're also gritty and realistic.
James Bond has always been train-driven. Like, if you look 100%. At the trends of the time that the movies are coming out.
It made sense.
Star Wars, sexism, race.
Yeah, but Star Wars comes out.
Oh, yeah,
they
Moonraker.
Do Moonraker. Yeah. It's like a direct response to everything that's happening. True. Oh, that's Skyfall is the Dark Knight. It's the same fucking movie.
Yeah, it's so true. It's a great
movie. Yeah, I like Skyfall, but it's the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see Leonardo DiCaprio is in talks to star as Evel Knievel?
Yeah, for Damien Chazelle.
In a biopic by Damien Chazelle.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch it as well.
Could be interesting.
Yeah.
Chazelle did La La Land.
Yeah. Whiplash.
Did he do First Man?
First Man's underrated.
I think that's an incredible
film. I think it's incredible. Claire Foy was robbed of an Oscar nomination. Like, seriously.
I found it a little bit boring.
Okay.
But I think Neil Armstrong is a little bit boring.
Yeah.
And I think that that's partly why we all know him, but we never sort of know much about his life.
Mm.
And people think the moon landings were faked because there wasn't much from him afterwards.
He seems boring because he's so, like...
Boring.
He's, like, so unaffected by things.
Yeah.
Like, things that would, like, traumatize normal people.
Yeah.
And, like, ruin them because he's just, like, so fucking rock solid. He was a test pilot.
Yeah.
So he tested things that try to kill him all the
time. Yeah, all his mates died as well, like, leading up to the actual... Yeah. Because, I mean, they weren't the first group that were going to go. Is that not correct? Yeah. Like, they... Like, people died getting to the moon. It's crazy.
Yeah, because all those guys were Navy and Air Force test pilots. They literally flew stuff that was probably going to kill them.
Yeah, exactly.
You had to have nerves
and they knew
fucking
that as well.
Titanium.
Yeah, they knew that as well. Yeah. Which is crazy. Yeah.
Evel Knievel, speaking of nerves of titanium, I guess you got to have those to be Evel Knievel. I don't know much about
stupid.
Him.
It's one of the
I think
other.
He was a bit of a showman, right?
He's a stuntman.
He was a stuntman and sort
performing.
Of performing. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Should we move on?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's chat a little briefly about The Monkey. This is made by Osgood Perkins, who brought us Long Legs last year.
Mm-hmm.
You're a little bit more of the horror aficionado, Perrin. But what I can say, I saw this a little while ago because I got to see it as an exhibitor.
Yes.
So it was a very early morning. So much so that I didn't think the Stercynical was open for us. And then sort of a side door opened and we went in. It was very early to watch this movie.
Interesting.
So it was quite a lot to see that early in the morning. It's very much a late night thing.
Yeah.
I found it silly.
Yeah.
And that was partly very fun.
Mm.
But it was silly. Where I think Longlegs took itself very seriously.
Yeah.
But this is based on a Stephen King short. Has anyone read or known about the short?
No, I hadn't even heard of it.
Where we have ourselves a monkey, a toy monkey, that enters the lives of these two brothers and proceeds to cause all kinds of mayhem, resulting in pretty much everyone dying.
Right.
When it gets wound up and turned on, someone will die.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the tagline. Everyone dies.
Everyone dies. it's silly.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you think?
So I mean, there were aspects of it. I just wish the marketing hid the kills more because I feel like the movie gave away way too many most of the kills.
Okay.
Which I think would have been. I would have reacted better to it if I had not known about it.
Right.
Cole was loving it because he forgot about the kills in the trailers. but I know Osgood Perkins mentioned that he, as long as he kept the energy of those kills, the silliness of it, to that of Itchy and Scratchy from The Simpsons, then he can get away with using as much blood and guts as he wanted.
Okay.
And it works to a certain degree.
Right. So he said that was his inspiration.
Yeah, one Itchy of the influences for the kills. So there's a lot of things that I liked going for it. I mean, it's got that visual appeal that I really like in Osgood Perkins movies. It's got the silly factor. But I feel like the script is quite flimsy. I felt the characters were very one-dimensional and boring and not interesting. So, like, by the end of the film, when the arcs happen and stuff, I'm like, okay, that's cool.
It was done. I feel like it was done for the fun of it.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted to love it so badly because everything on paper I wanted. Like, I love a goofy horror comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just feel like the setup in particular takes way too long. Like, there's the setup of narration and providing context to what's about to happen felt like by the time it was ended, I was like, okay, we still got 60 minutes to go.
Okay. What you know, interesting. Sometimes a short film, I mean, sometimes a short story should really be a short film.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So maybe it could have made a fun short. Right. Yeah. But I think it would be cool in a cinema. Like, I think it'll bring the fun of going to the cinema to watch these kinds of moments.
Right. Yeah, and cool I mean, the thing is, like, you got to also take what I say with a pinch of salt, because the people I watched it with, from the sounds of it, most of the people were loving it. Like, they were laughing, they were enjoying it, and I think the silly factor of the kills was a real bonus, you know what I mean? That it wasn't taking itself too seriously.
Yeah.
I just felt like it didn't quite stick those jokes well enough, but
did you appreciate his cameo?
I loved his cameo.
As
his
the cameo sort of was creepy great. Uncle.
Yeah,
it was Osgood cool Perkins, how he put himself it? In because he has acted.
Who's he?
Osgood Perkins.
The director. He has done some acting. Yeah. He was like the nerdy dude in Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
So he's had these sort of weird, weird cameos. I see. Cole left his keys here from his last shift, so I'm sure he's gonna come by to collect them.
Yeah,
pick them up.
Cool.
Speak of the devil, here he is now.
Oh, okay. Sorry, guys. I left my keys here. Oh, there they are. But actually, while I'm here, I just want to talk to you guys about the monkey. I hope you were talking about the monkey, because I want to talk about the monkey now. I want to say that this film works so well, and what works is that it's a mix of horror and comedy, which I feel like people have attempted very often, and I don't think it works very often. So the skill to make something bloody gory and shocking, but then hilariously funny at the same time, I think shows an incredible skill in directing. Because this director, I went into this film with no confidence in him, because I watched Long Legs, and I thought that was like the most unsatisfying, stilted, and contrived horror. It relied too much on Nick Cage, and the satanic ending just came out of nowhere, right? So I went into this not expecting much, and then I ended up laughing from start to finish. I thought the intro with surprise guest Adam Scott, which I didn't know was going to be a thing, was so hilarious, because horrors often start with that first kill, right? It starts with the first kill to show you, A, it's a horror, but B, this is how this horror is different to other horrors. And this is the tone. It sets the tone. And this first kill was just hilariously funny. The way they treated the silence and the sound with the shock of the kill is so damn funny. And all the way through the film, up until the point where the woman explodes when she jumps in the pool, which I hope Russell didn't have a problem with, because that's exactly why it's insane. That's why it's absurd, right? So a woman jumps on like into a pool or onto a pool and then suddenly explodes. Right, that's just crazy, which works with the premise, because this is about a monkey beating a drum and executing people in this Final Destination style. That to make that work logically, you can't really make it work well, right? So I think I enjoyed that it didn't take itself seriously at all. A lot of horrors try too hard to take themselves seriously, and this just being funny from start to finish was just the most incredibly satisfying ride. For like 90 minutes, it's a 90-minute film, so it's cut super tight and it's super satisfying in that way. So, yeah, I would highly recommend this to anyone that's interested in comedy and horror and how those two things can work well together. That's my take. Hope you guys have a great day. I'm bouncing.
Yay. Thank you, Cole.
Thanks, Cole.
Bye, Cole.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
What else have we been enjoying at the moment? Chips.
Well, Paddington in Peru just came out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere other than the UK.
Yeah.
Because it came out in the UK last year.
Like ages ago.
Yeah, I don't understand why it was delayed everywhere else so much, but whatever. I'm not in charge of these things.
And what do we think of it?
Well, do you want to go free? I know you have thoughts of it. And
yeah. Look, I mean, we spoke briefly about it earlier, but like it was never going to be Paddington 2. Paddington
no, Pooh. I mean,
Paddington Pooh. Sorry. Paddington 2 is a perfect movie. It's so sweet. It's so charming. It's so much fun.
Paddington 2 is the one where he goes to jail, right?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So Paddington 3 for me, it's fine. It's still charming. It's still got that. But I feel like it's just the stakes aren't high enough. I feel like it just wasn't as charming as 3, but then I'm nitpicking because I'm just comparing everything to Paddington 2 now. You know what I mean? I'll watch the new Scorsese movie. Why isn't it Paddington 2? But I mean, yeah, it was fine. I just didn't feel engaged with it as much as I did the first two.
Okay.
If anyone watches the beautiful Nicolas Cage film, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, Nicolas Cage plays himself. He gets embroiled in this whole adventure with Pedro Pascal. And in that movie, they talk about the greatest films of all time. And he quotes Paddington 2 as being one of the greatest films of all time. And he sort of goes, what?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to them finishing it and him realizing it is one of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah, he's crying. He's like, Paddington 2 is incredible.
And so ever since then, it's been a mountain that it would be tough to have anyone try and conquer again. I think everyone was a little bit nervous when they realized that Paul King, who was the visionary director and writer behind the first two Paddingtons, wasn't involved in the third. But as we said, it still sort of lives up to it. I haven't had a chance to see it.
I actually thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay, good.
I think it's very, very sweet. I think, well, like you're bringing up Paul King, the thing is, we're all fucking movie nerds.
Yes. Yeah,
that's true.
99% of people
have no idea who Paul King is.
They don't know who any directors are.
That's true.
So they have no idea who Paul King is, and they're not going to go into this with it in their head going, oh, well, Paul King didn't do this
one.
That's
true.
Which will kind of, I think if you go in that way, it'll kind of affect your perception of it.
100%.
I think it's got like 90% of what the other ones had.
Lovely.
I think it's very sweet.
Paddington
is as a technical thing, Paddington is incredible.
So
underrated as like a visual effects movie.
Okay,
just purely the craft of it.
It's incredible. Like often the thing they struggle with like CGI characters is making it feel like they're actually there in the space with other actors. Paddington does it so well. It feels like he's actually like in the space with these other people.
Ben Whishaw's so good as Paddington.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he
perfect
is Paddington.
Voice, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They also recast Sally Hawkins.
Yeah, I don't know why.
With Emily Mortimer.
Yeah, I don't know what she was doing that I
can't really find, like, people, there's theories that, oh, she's got like lupus and she can travel to Peru, and like the other ones were like scheduling conflicts, and other ones were like she's not interested in Paddington anymore. Like
normally these things are like scheduling conflicts.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the fact,
it's a very real
because
thing.
The reason that Paul King didn't do this was because he was doing Wonka.
Okay.
And she was in Wonka.
Yeah, that
I don't know what else
be.
She was doing.
I mean,
at the time.
Sally Hawkins is one of the best things about those Paddington movies. She brings so much heart
really
and
good.
Soul to it. I love Emily Mortimer, but it was so jarring because. Because, like, everyone's acting like it's normal. And she looks nothing like Sally Hawkins.
Sure. But once again, 90% of the audience
is this different? And then they'll forget about
it. Do you know what I think it is? I think it's a good, dependable family movie.
Yeah.
And that's what Paddington is. It's a family movie. It's not just for kiddies. It's for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why they're so successful.
It also has, I'm not going to tell you what it is at this point in time, I think it has the best post-credit scene of any movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
That's a really good one. Yeah.
It's really good.
Okay. Well, we're screening it at the Bioscope.
Cool.
I took one good look at the landscape of kids' films.
Yes.
And not only with our move to 44 Stanley as the Bioscope, where we are in a more family friendly neighborhood. Mubberning was not family friendly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Downtown Joburg. Yeah. You shouldn't bring your kids to. But looking at the extent of kids and family films that come out, I had to also then start making the decisions around which ones are Bioscope fitting.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I quickly realized just how many of them are very, very shit. And they still do well. They arguably... Kids cinema is underpinning the cinema industry because they are a guaranteed 2 or 3 hours of entertainment for parents that I know really want to sort of keep their kids entertained, busy, and occupied with stuff. But having looking at what's coming out. I don't want to take anything and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Inside Out 2 was smart and good.
Yeah.
Mufasa made some sense being local in this kind of bush in South Africa.
Sense. Yeah.
That story. And then Paddington 2, Paddington in Peru just made sense because it's Paddington. It's such a lovable series. And then the next one I want to definitely do is How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it comes with
iconic,
lot of love and craft.
Okay.
Not just banged out.
But I mean, that's where we talk about the art of making a good family film, because I feel like studios, when they're like, let's make a family film, it's strictly catered towards kids. So it's very kiddie. It's very not fun for the parents.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's very few occasions of family movies where you can watch it at any age and it'll be fantastic. Yeah. Toy Story, great example. Paddington, great example. Even underrated, Hugo by Scorsese. Great family movie. Great family movie.
That needs a rewatch for me.
Yeah,
it's
same.
So good. I got the, I'm fucking being nerdy physical media parent, but the 4K Arrow set is just outstanding. It made me appreciate the movie on another level.
Yeah, it turns into sort of like a film studies.
It's literally, it's Scorsese's love letter to movie making, to storytelling. Yeah. And it's just so beautiful.
Early cinema, George Méliès.
Yes, yeah. He was a magician initially. Like, that's what he did. So he was like, no one's doing this stuff with film, let me do it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's just, so like a great family film is just so hard to come by. And
yeah, no, I remember being invited to an early screening of the Garfield movie. Being like, it's worth a crack. It's got old Chris Pratt in it. I left halfway through.
I remember you saying.
Because it was in the morning and it's like, I've got lots of work to do. And I know by halfway through, I'm like, I'm not going to screen this.
Yeah.
It's like, this is shit.
Yeah. But that's the thing though. I mean, like, I've gotten to that age as well where I'm sure you guys are the same. If you're not feeling a movie about 30, 40 minutes in, why bother carrying on?
Mm. Yeah, sure. But the cinema, however, is the one place where you feel you need to make it.
Yeah, because you paid for it. Yeah.
And it's a little bit like the early days of video renting where
it's
like,
true.
There's not much else on tonight.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have Netflix at my disposal.
Yep.
I've paid for it. I'm going to put up with this.
That's a good point. I agree with you. But
we don't have to put up with it. We're getting, as I said, it's part of our visual literacy.
Mm.
We have so much else available to us that if we're not feeling it, we just bow out.
Yep.
Totally. Yeah.
Speaking of TV shows and bowing out, we are giving Severance season 2 a go, but it's quite a tough thing. You got to remember a lot of season 1.
Okay.
Arguably actually go back and watch the first season. So we got like an episode or two in and it's like, Jesus, this is tough. Do you know what I mean? It's quite a lot of work. Not to say that it isn't incredible, and I know the world is buzzing around it. So we really need to give it more time.
Right.
But like it's quite a lot.
Okay.
And that opening sequence of season 2 is him running around for
nuts.
A long time.
Yeah.
To a point where you're like, okay, where are we going?
Yeah, he's doing
what are we doing?
He's doing his Tom Cruise run.
Yeah.
But I rewatched season 1, so like I was
okay. You're back in.
Okay.
Yeah. No, because I remember watching season 1, going, "Fuck me, I'm in."
Yeah,
and then it being a little too long until season 2.
But that's I often find. Hey, a lot of shows when they return, their recaps are dreadful. Like Netflix are so bad at their recaps.
Dang.
So like I remember when Dark was coming out, the German head fucking show, right? That season 1 finish amazing. Season 2 comes out a year later. I'm like, sweet, let's watch. Recap was dog shit. It started out with something that they didn't recap. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So I had to go back and rewatch because it was impossible to gauge what was happening.
Yeah. But we have spent more time with Paradise.
Okay.
Which is the big Disney Plus. This is Sterling K. Brown.
Love him.
James Marsden. And then, for those who don't know, and I don't know whether we're ready to reveal the, you know, the big episode 1 sort of reveal.
Right.
Okay.
But it's a great crime story. It's a,
okay.
It's turning into a little bit of a whodunit.
Right.
Oh, cool.
It's a nice unfolder. Basically, this is epic. I mean, it's on the biggest scale. We're talking like the President of the United States getting murdered, and Sterling K. Brown is his chief bodyguard and the last person to see him alive. But there is just so much more to this show.
Oh, cool. Okay.
It's like a big apocalyptic level, huge scale thing.
Okay.
I think we can maybe soon get into sort of the reveal. I think most people have kind of seen it at this point, but at the end of episode one is a big like reveal.
Okay.
Of like massive proportions.
Right.
And that sets the course for the whole show.
Okay. Sick.
But it's testament to sort of where we're going, because I'm curious whether any of you guys have seen Zero Day or Day Zero. Zero Day?
No.
Day Zero.
It's a
TV show. Which is the big Netflix one with De Niro.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, I haven't watched it yet.
It's also this like big world apocalyptic kind of stakes.
Right.
Jeez, okay.
And I know Silo is getting into it, which Silo is a very kind of similar thing.
Okay.
So it's like we're definitely at this point where I think with climate change and all sorts and Trump
supreme leader
setting
Trump,
the world alight. That we're starting to have these kind of conversations.
Yeah.
We're starting to make these TV shows about, you know, the world ending.
Time to rewatch Dr. Strangelove, hey?
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Shit. But anything else anyone's dying to chat about? Because otherwise we might pack it up and go at this point.
We've got to talk about the Oscars.
Okay. Let's end off on that.
Cool.
Okay.
The Oscars are...
Next week.
Next week.
Yeah.
Next week, Sunday.
I'll watch it live. So
okay. Why you work at the
video
store.
Yeah, so when I come in, I'm gonna be buzzing all fucking dead tired.
Well, I would love you to join because I think having that energy will be cool.
Yeah.
I think let's probably just do a little sweep through the main categories.
Yeah.
Because to me, it feels like it's a little bit locked in this year.
I actually don't think so.
I agree with Perrin. The awards leading up to it have been so all over the place.
Yeah. So just for context, right? Yes. So usually the Guild Awards determine who wins the big awards, right?
And so
Sean Bacon and Nora has been closing up shop at the Independent Spirit Awards, which is a big factor. Critics' Choice Award was more split up there.
Yeah, sure.
BAFTAs dominated, BAFTAs were split up as well. But leading up to this, so every year, normally for years, those would determine those categories.
Yeah.
But it's been so different lately.
Okay, because the guilds are all the sort of specific craft. So you've got the Directors Guild.
Yeah.
So that really sort of sets a tone for director.
Mm. Yeah.
Screen Actors is...
Yeah.
Is one thing. There's probably a writer's guild.
Yeah. Yep. So the biggest body, voting body, is the acting body, right? Okay. So whoever wins best ensemble usually dictates what's going to win best picture. Parasite won best ensemble, surprised everyone, won best picture.
This is at the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Who won? Because the Screen Actors Guild have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
who won best ensemble?
So Conclave won. So I said Conclave was going to be the
wild card.
Yeah, the dark horse.
The dark horse.
That or Wicked, because the Academy loves musicals. It's been proven that historically, right?
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, so the lock-ins are Zoe Saldana for Supporting Actress and Kieran Culkin.
You think so?
Yeah, I was about to say, that does feel...
They haven't lost on the road in those categories at all. There's been very few occasions historically where an actor has, especially best actor, has not won anything on the road and then won best actor. Yeah. Last person who did that was Adrian Brody with The Pianist.
Okay.
So by on the road, you mean
all the other awards.
In the awards season build up.
Yeah.
And for those who just perhaps don't know or have the context, you know, we're in the awards season.
Yeah.
As we said, there's lots of different kinds of awards. And I think strategically, the Academy Awards has really always been
the curtain closer.
It's always been the end of the season.
Yeah.
And arguably the biggest.
So, yes. so yeah, like if we just go through the major categories now.
So Zoe Saldana for Best Supporting for Emilia Perez at the Oscars.
Okay. I would like to also just briefly touch on who we think we should win those categories. So Supporting Actress, I would love to see Monica Barbaro from A Complete Unknown win. As Joni Baez. She is just outstanding in that role.
Yeah, she was good in that.
But it would likely go to...
It's definitely Zoe Saldana. I think... So this is why we were saying the Oscar, the award season has been so all over the place, because there's been one big favorite, Emilia Perez. Controversy rocked that.
Yeah. Mm.
Also, the amount of people who are hating on it is now affecting voters. They're like, oh, we don't want to award Crash 2.0 or Green Book 2.0, right?
Yeah. Once again, as an audience, we are getting smarter.
Yeah.
To where there are these films that are sometimes getting more hype than they perhaps deserve.
Mm. Yeah. So the reason why a lot of people are turning sour to Emilia Perez is it's blatant Oscar bait. And it sucks because that filmmaker, Jacques Audier, whatever his name is, he's a great filmmaker. Yeah. Like, so he's done great movies, right? But so like we said, then The Brutalist was the runaway favorite.
Yeah.
But then the AR controversy rocked that one. Mm. So now people are a little hesitant on that. Nice. Namely Adrian Brody, where it was revealed that AR was used to alter their accents to sound more Hungarian.
Right.
So while watching that, you're not sure if, is that really Adrian Brody or is that the AI doing it, you know, which really sucks because it downplays how good he's in that film. And then obviously AI was used for some of the art that he was drawing in it, which I think is, I think they're overblowing that situation quite a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think, I'm going to run through these. I'll get your guys' opinions as well.
Thank you.
Sorry. So actor in a leading role, Adrian Brody on the Road has been the favorite.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet won Best Actor at the Screen Actors Guild. So that could be a determining factor that he wins the Oscar.
Yeah.
I still am not sure.
Yeah.
I would love to. Coleman Domingo is my guy.
That's my choice.
He's always been my choice, but I know that there's just not enough votes for him.
It baffles me how A24 did not campaign for that movie. They barely campaigned for it.
Sure.
Because he's so good in it.
Yeah.
And it's such a great message as well. Mm. But I don't think Sebastian Stan stands a chance there. He's great as Donald Trump, but I think I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and say Chalamet is going to win it.
I've got
a feeling it will be as well.
Because the Academy loves music biopics. Yeah. Historically, have always, with exception to Austin Butler's Elvis, they've always awarded anyone playing a musician. Like, very rarely go anywhere else, right? Then... Actor in the supporting role, Kieran Culkin won. I'd love to see Yura Borisov from Anora win.
Anora.
I think the guy who plays the godfather, the godparent to, I would have loved to see him nominated because he's hysterical in it.
Yeah.
I think the only other person who could beat Kieran Culkin to that spot is maybe Edward Norton for A Complete Unknown because he's due. Actress in a leading role, actress in the leading role. Okay.
That we haven't done, yeah.
All right, so the dark horse there is Fernando Torres, where I'm still here. I'm dying to see it. It's unavailable to watch anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So she won the Golden Globe. Mm. That rocked everything up. Everyone's like, okay, she's the dark horse here. But now that category, Carla Sofia Gascon and Emilia Perez is the lead. She does not stand a chance.
Yeah.
Netflix have effectively stopped campaigning for her because of the hateful tweets from her past.
Yes.
She's even pulled herself out of the race. So I doubt she'll even be at the ceremony.
Jeez.
So Mikey Madison's won all the awards except for Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
Who won Screen Actors Guild?
Demi Moore.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, no, I think that one's a lock-in.
So you think Demi Moore's going to win that,
I think it's a lock-in.
Okay. So, I'm hesitant, right? So, Mikey Madison, I think she should win that category. She's fucking incredible in that movie, right? It's not just a movie of screaming and it's a physical performance. It's comedic.
Yeah.
She's just outstanding. It's touching. That last scene in Anora is one of the best scenes of last year. Anyways. Yeah.
No, I agree.
I would love to see her win.
Yeah.
I would not be mad with anyone else. I wouldn't be mad if Demi Moore wins because Substance, she's great. I rewatched it. I don't think she's as strong as Mikey Madison. It's a different kind of performance, obviously. Right.
They're very different movies.
Yeah, yeah, but Demi Moore would be such a great like comeback story.
Yeah.
And the Oscar loves a comeback story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Seabiscuit, whatever. Yeah.
Are you doing the
Kim Kardashian?
Yeah. You're doing the Chris Pratt outtake in Parks and Rec. Yeah.
And they're like, what? I don't think so. Have you seen this, Graham?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she got cum on her back.
That's horrible. So good.
So funny.
Okay, well, who do you think's a lock for that category?
I think Russell's right that Demi Moore is going to win.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad. And I think
My vote is Mikey Madison. Yeah,
fucking outstanding. So the thing is, the reason why I don't think it's in favor of Mikey Madison and Chalamet is the Academy will be like, oh, they're young.
They'll get it eventually.
But we don't want another DiCaprio situation where he should have won for Wolf of Wall Street. He should have won for What's Eating Gilbert Grape. You know, like, actually, no, Ralph Fiennes should have won that year for Schindler's List. Anyway.
That's long in the past.
Okay, so.
Let's go on to director.
Okay, director. I'm just scrolling down. Okay. Very stacked category.
Yeah.
I don't think. It sucks because every category Emilia Perez is in, it feels like it's a wasted spot.
Yes, I agree.
I can't remember who else should have actually been in directing.
But at the Directors Guild. Sean Baker won.
For
Nora. So that seems to be the
a big factor in the Oscars as well in determining who wins what. Usually one film that isn't there at all is The Room Next Door. Alma DeVore won Golden Lion at Venice. Golden Lion winner is usually a big player at the Oscars.
Yeah.
Whatever wins there usually does significantly well at the Oscars.
Right.
So but what Anora has in its favor is Palme d'Or.
Yeah, it won the big award at Cannes last year.
Yeah,
and
massive.
That set it on a lovely path.
So
yeah, I don't know.
So the favorites in this category was mostly Brady Courbet for
The Brutalist,
but I think Sean Baker's runaway favorite at the moment because he's swept up literally everywhere before that. Yeah. But Bong Joon-ho was being outbeaten by Sam Mendes with 1917.
Yeah.
And the only award he didn't win on the night was the Oscars.
Yes.
So I think it's either, I don't think Sean Baker's a lock. I'd love to see him win that category.
Yeah.
But my vote, other than Sean Baker, would be Coralie Faget for The Substance.
Okay. That'd be nice. Yeah.
But I think likelihood, if it's not Sean Baker, it's Brady Courbet for The Brutalist. It's the kind of movie that the Academy loves.
Yes.
Big, epic, unflinching movie, film.
I think interesting just about this category in particular, the best director at the Academy Awards, is we're basically almost at 100 Academy Awards. We're on like 96, 97, right?
Yeah.
We have only had two females.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of which was an Asian woman. The other one was a white lady.
Chloe Zhao and...
Okay. That is the
three. We've got had three female directors.
Three females.
Jane Campion.
Did Jane Campion win?
Chloe Zhao and
the Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, Hurt Locker. Shit, I'm
Hurt Locker. That's right.
Catherine Bigelow.
Catherine Bigelow. Yeah.
Okay, so then what? Jane Campion must have been like piano.
Power of the Dog.
Power of the Dog.
Should have swept everything. That movie.
Everyone else has been a white male.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we can justify the first few years where no one was even contemplating diversity.
Yeah.
But we have yet to have a black person, male or female, win, which I think is very interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
That we've gone with women first, but we are yet to have a black person win
the
best
closest
director.
Person to come to doing it recently was Barry Jenkins.
Yeah, but still didn't take it.
He took Best Picture and Screenplay.
Yeah.
They've received other awards, and the Spike Lees have got Oscars for their screenwriting, but no one's gotten Best Director.
One of my favorite Spike Lee quotes. So famously, Spike Lee, Do the Right Thing, wasn't nominated for any Oscars in the 80s, 1989-90. I think it got a screenplay nomination. But anyways, Driving Miss Daisy won everything that year, which is crazy. And Do the Right Thing is one of the most important movies of the past 40 years, right? And when he was at the Oscars, so he finally won an Oscar for Black Klansman for screenplay.
Yeah.
And he was rooting for Roma. Roma's a fantastic film. So Roma was winning everything and didn't win Best Picture. Anyways, my favorite quote after the ceremony was from Spike Lee. He's like, anytime there's a white person driving a black person around, I lose. It's so funny. Yes, like, but okay, so let's shift over to animated feature.
Oh, right.
So a lock for a while. I mean, Pixar usually dominates that category.
Yeah.
I don't think Inside Out 2 stands a chance against The Wild Robot or Flow. I think Flow is going to win.
You think so?
Yeah. I think Flow has gotten such respect from people within the craft and from other filmmakers. I think.
But you don't think that Wild Robot will win purely by its popularity?
I don't think that
more people have watched it.
I think people just appreciate the craft with which and with how Flow got made.
I have to point out,
yes,
The Tale of the Princess Kaguya lost to Big Hero 6.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Like, and that's one of Studio Ghibli's best films. That's a very good point.
That's the kind of thing that happens in this category in particular.
But that being said, Wild Robot is amazing.
It is a good film.
It is a good movie.
I haven't seen Flow. So
I still think Inside Out 2 is going to take it.
Oh, you think so?
Definitely.
Wow, okay.
Just because of how popular. I mean, this is the.
It's actually a stacked category. It's a really good category. Yeah.
But I think this is one that's often a popularity award.
Yeah, that's the one category every year without fail people are pissed off about.
Yeah.
Because the Academy voters, especially my biggest gripe is you read the anonymous voter ballots.
Yes.
Yeah, you've said this before.
Infuriating. They often say, I let my kid pick the best animated film. Or they abstain because they don't think animated films are cinema. They don't think it's a craft worthy of it, which is bullshit because it's one of the oldest forms of it.
Yes.
I would vote for Wild Robot.
Okay.
If it was me, as much as I loved Inside Out 2, I haven't seen Flow. I would be on Flo. My anonymous ballot. Yeah. Comment is that I haven't seen it, but I thought Wild Robot was the perfect blend.
It's a good film.
Of it all, where like visually from a craft point of view, it just looked absolutely incredible. It had all the GUIs.
I'm hoping so for me personally. So I would vote Flow just because it's such a raw piece of filmmaking in that it goes back to the very basics of it. There's no dialogue at all in it. It's all just what you see is what you get. And the sound design is absolutely gorgeous. The music's incredible.
I would vote Flow.
Last year was... What was last year?
I'm busy trying to check now. But, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
In the year that Loving Vincent came out, it didn't win.
Yeah. But
and that was like 100,000 oil paintings.
Yeah. My only gripe with that movie is I felt the story was bland.
Okay. Right.
The visuals, holy shit.
I mean, no one will ever make a movie like that again.
The same directors did a film called The Peasants recently.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
But
I did hear about
the problem with that, the great thing about the Vincent van Gogh one is that it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But the Peasants film, it mostly
takes
place.
Did they do it in the same style?
Yeah. But it takes mostly in place. It takes mostly, I think it's set in Poland or something. It takes mostly in place in a barn house and it's all gray and grim. Like,
okay.
Why did you need to do it this
weird way? Use. Last year was The Boy and the Heron.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
we should have known that.
I remember that was an upset because it beat Across the Spider-Verse.
Damn. Okay.
That deserved it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Should we get on to the big one?
Yeah. So let's do screenplay first.
Okay.
Just quick. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I also want to do visual effects because I'm invested in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to do it while I'm looking for it?
Sure. Okay. Visual effects. I think Wicked's going to win. Yeah. Not because it deserves to win, but because this is another category where they tend to pick rather than the one that deserves it the most is the one that's just like the movie out of the list that is like the critic favorite.
Okay. Yeah.
And
Wicked
is a bit of a darling.
What else is?
Alien Romulus, Better Man, Dune, and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
I'd pick Dune.
Is visual effects, it's specifically the technology of it?
Yeah.
It's a bit of both.
Artistry,
practical. Yeah.
Does it include the practical effects?
Yeah.
So I remember for years it was split up. There were visual effects and visual... It was like sound effects. I remember there were two categories. There were sound mixing and sound effects.
Yes.
And they eventually merged it because voters couldn't tell the difference.
Yeah.
That was quite recent, though.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because I think Wicked's
But with visual effects, it's been visual effects for a long
time. Okay, no, you're right. Yeah,
I think I don't know if there was. Yeah. I can't remember if there was a point where it was special effects and visual effects.
Yeah, I think there was. I think
they definitely renamed it at one point.
Yeah. What would you pick?
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
The visual effects in that movie are like it's take stuff like that for granted these days.
Yeah, I know, it's true.
The effects in that movie are insane.
I cannot believe the reboot Planet of the Apes trilogy never got the third one in particular should have won every fucking award. Jesus. I can't believe it didn't win. Yeah.
I think Wicked's going to win the set design, the costumes.
I'm not angry about that.
Because it very much deserved it. Because of how much was practical and built and done.
Yeah.
I think that was a real feat.
Yes.
I would love to see Better Man take that, but I haven't seen Kingdom of the Planet.
That'd be great.
Yes, but the visual. Yeah. Again, it's like one of those ones where we sort of take it for granted because we think we've seen it before.
Yeah.
But the stuff in that movie is insane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so screenplay adapted. I think a complete unknown is going to win that category. I think Nickel Boy should win. I've read the book, and the film is... I cannot believe they haven't been pushing harder for that film. Really? It is, at its heart, it's an experimental film. The whole film is told through POV.
Yeah.
And did you ever watch The Diving Bell and the Butterfly?
No.
So that movie was mostly taking place through the POV of someone who's paralyzed, right?
Mm.
And the movie, it's about a guy who wrote the book by blinking. So it'd be like A, B, C, D, blink.
Oh my God, Jesus.
A, B, C, D, E, blink. Like, right? So, Nickel Boys, I thought it was going to be gimmicky, but holy shit, it's incredible. That should have been nominated for cinematography because it's just stunning. I would love to see that one. I think it's going to be either Conclave or Complete Unknown. Sing Sing's nominated in that category as well.
Yeah.
But I think a Complete Unknown, if it's not going to get a lot of awards, it's going to win there. One thing to note, if your film isn't nominated for editing or screenplay and you're still nominated for Best Picture, you don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
You have to have at least two of those. It has to be editing or screenplay.
Mm.
So that's why A Complete Unknown could shock everyone and win Best Picture. If they win the screenplay and editing, they're going to win Best Picture.
Right.
100%.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, whoever wins those two categories, you'll be able to tell, okay, this is who's going to win Best Picture. So, yeah. So, original screenplay, Anora, The Brutalist, A Real Pain, September 5, The Substance. I'd love to see The Substance win.
Okay.
I think it's going to be between Anora and A Real Pain.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think A Real Pain will...
Yeah, Kieran... Jesse Eisenberg's speeches have been wonderful.
He's won a bunch on the road.
Yeah, he won 4 at the BAFTAs, and he won at this Writers Guild, I think. Okay. Oh, no, Anora won Writers Guild. So... I think, I don't know. You see, I don't have a lock for that category.
Yeah.
But let's move to Best Picture. Okay. So like I said, on the night, if you see one film's won editing and screenplay, that's going to win Best Picture.
Mm.
It will. I think Conclave might actually win it because of the Screen Actors Guild for Ensemble. Okay. I think that's going to shock everyone. It's going to be either that or A Complete Unknown.
It won the BAFTA, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
So I think the Oscars have also recently, I mean, they've given a lot of awards to one films recently, like Everything Everywhere All at Once, Parasite, but they also like to split the load, especially if the year is stacked, right? So I think if Sean Baker wins director, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't win Best Picture.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And also he's nominated for editing, so they might actually be like, you know what? We'll give you editing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the same thing happened with Alfonso Cuarón with Roma. He won for cinematography, he won editing, he won directing, and I think he wrote screenplay. He didn't win a screenplay. He won for directing and cinematography. He didn't win Best Picture, which he should have won.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting night. I'm most looking forward to Conan O'Brien hosting because he's one of my idols, legitimately. I love him so much. I used to tape his show on NBC Africa back in the day when it was on late at night, and I'm very excited about it. So it's going to be an interesting night.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I waffled.
No, I appreciate it. And it's just, once again, this is why you are on the show.
Yeah.
It's because you are the person who's got this knowledge and these thoughts, and you are the person who stays up late, because for South Africa,
yeah,
it's the early hours of the morning. Like that cock hours is when it starts. It's like 3
a.m.
4.
It's literally 3 a.m.
And
yeah,
it sort of finishes by sort of 6.
Yes.
And so then, when South Africans wake up, you would have woken up just to the best
news,
picture
yeah,
coming out.
So I think before we go, the biggest snub of the year, Challenges.
Oh, my Lord.
Where the fuck are you? It should have been in score and won there.
Yep. And editing.
Editing, original screenplay, directing. What the fuck?
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree.
That's wild.
I very much agree.
And now Wicked should not have been nominated for Best Original Score. Like, what the fuck? Like, great music, but it doesn't qualify.
No, it was music that was written a very long time ago.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's because it's the same composer.
So I checked. So I was like, I thought they would be ineligible because if it's based on previous music, it can't count. So Better Man wouldn't count because it's a jukebox musical, right? This, apparently the nomination is for the music interludes between the songs.
New music added.
Okay, so there was enough new music.
But it wasn't memorable. I don't remember it.
No, but that's silly because everyone's going to confuse it with the big songs that
have
been around for decades.
So Brutalist is taking that category. Okay. Great score.
I'll never be mad at John Powell because I think he's incredible.
Mm.
But I don't understand how these things work.
Who's John Powell?
The guy who did Wicked.
Okay.
He's the guy that had to Train Your Dragon.
Oh,
okay, but did he do the original famous songs as well?
No, I think he did. I think he did the musical as well. Yeah,
he did the music.
Wow. If you look up the soundtrack.
Oh yeah, you're right.
He's credited for writing the music.
Bangers, eh? Absolute bangers.
Okay. He's like an incredible composer. Yeah. So underrated.
Okay, well then maybe this is the award that goes to him for what he did a while ago.
One person who we know who's not gonna win is in Best Original Song.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So her name is Diane Warren.
Okay.
She has got the most Oscar nominations without winning. She's got a lifetime achievement now, I think. Like the honorary Oscar.
This is for Emilia Perez?
No, this is for The Journey, which I've
I thought you were going to talk about like the silly songs of Emilia.
No, so
Perez.
Emilia Perez, El Marwell won. The Journey. So Diane Warren has never won an Oscar. She's there every year and she hasn't won. I can see her laugh is just like, I'm not going to fucking win. I think she's got an honorary Oscar now, but I think Like a Bird from Sing Sing should win.
Yeah.
The closing credits one.
Yeah.
This is for Best Song.
Original Song.
Original Song.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, I'm done now. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I appreciate it. Thanks, P-Dog.
Pleasure.
All right. Thank you, chaps. Thanks for a lovely day.
Mm.
Yeah. Just lovely to catch up. And exciting to chat Oscars this time next week.
Yep.
Yay.
It's the magic.
I'm either going to be very angry or very happy.
Yes.
Oh, lovely, man. All right, cool. Thank you, guys. Thanks for wandering in and browsing the shelves while we spoke all this shit.
Yeah.
And we'll see you guys again next week.
Yeah.
Our home base is the video store. That's co.za. That's where everything is. And come on back next week.
Please do.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.